Well, on this episode of MSU Today, we're going to discuss the progress in the implementation of one of the themes of the MSU 2030 Strategic Plan. Today, it's the stewardship and sustainability theme, and our Vice President of Strategic Initiatives, Bill Beekman, is here to lead the discussion, and that's going to be with Laura Young from the Office of Sustainability and Sherry Jett from Infrastructure, Planning, and Facilities. Welcome to you both, and Bill, take it away.
Well, thanks so much, Russ, and it's great to have you both with us today. So I like to always start out with telling us a little bit about what your role is on campus, what you do on a day-to-day basis, what you worry about, what your responsibilities are. So, Sherry, we'll start with you.
Well, right now I'm wearing a couple different hats. So I'm Director of Utilities. That means the Power and Water Department reports to me. I'm also Interim AVP of Real Estate and Capital Planning and Projects on campus right now. So we stay very busy between energy and water for the campus, as well as major projects in real estate operations. We like to say that we keep campus running 24/7, 365.
And Laura?
So I am a sustainability manager within the Office of Sustainability, and we're here to serve the campus as an enterprise resource for trying to advance sustainability across the entire institution, which is honestly, truly, it's one of the, I've been here as a student, I've worked here for, I think this is my 11th year, and I have learned so much about the university in this role because we are cross-cutting in that we work with academics, we work with folks in outreach, we work with folks in operations like Sherry, work with folks in the administration, we work really closely with students, and every day I find out new things or I meet new people, and it's just very, very invigorating to kind of see all the really exciting things happening at MSU from a sustainability standpoint.
Well, so let's start there. I think we all sort of have a sense of what sustainability is, but as you think about it on a daily basis, what does sustainability mean to you in your role at Michigan State?
So this is a great question, and if you'll indulge me a little bit, I want to talk just a little bit about what sustainability is as a concept, because I know there are so many different ways that people interpret what this thing means. So a really common definition, you know, if you were to put it into Google, might be that it's about meeting the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. And this comes from a 1987 UN report. And what I want to emphasize is that there has been so much progress in the sustainability space since that report came out. Sustainability is highly interdisciplinary, and it's a relatively new field. And so there's still a really rich ongoing debate kind of about what does sustainability mean? And so that's why people have all these different conceptualizations of what it might mean to them. So I know in my work, people might hear that I work in the Office of Sustainability and they might go, oh, so do you do work in recycling? Or do you do work in renewable energy? Or whatever their framing might be. And it's a really interesting conversation to have with folks in that it's, yes, these things do touch sustainability, but it's really so much more and broader. And it's about how people connect with the natural world. It's about how we live in this complex set of systems, social systems, political systems, economic systems, ecological systems, and how all of these things are constantly at play, constantly interacting with one another. And it's really important for us to think about how the decisions and actions that we are taking today truly will have an impact on the future, and how we can protect not just human life, but all living life on Earth, well beyond our time here on planet Earth. And so to put this into perspective too, because there's a lot of trade-offs and things when we think about sustainability work, I like to kind of level set around the UN Sustainable Development Goals. So for listeners, if you aren't very familiar with the concept of sustainability, the Sustainable Development Goals are 17 goals that UN member states came together to ratify by 2015, or ratified in 2015 to try to reach by 2030. And they are very, very comprehensive and broad. So they encompass things like poverty, hunger, health, education, equity, clean water, clean energy, and affordable energy, just institutions, life below water, life on land, climate action, and other pieces. And what I really like about these sustainable development goals is that people can look at them and sort of connect them to their own personal lives and think about these global sustainability challenges that we have. But it's really important to remember that if we're trying to, let's say, solve for sustainable development goal number 2, zero hunger, we have to find solutions that are tenable for the other goals that we have if we really want to create a sustainable future. So we can't create a solution that says, you know, maybe has really negative impacts for human health. We can't create a solution that, yes, enables us to produce more food, but has detrimental impacts to pollinators who actually really support food production across the world. And so that is what makes sustainability work really fun, but also challenging, because we have to think about things from a systems perspective. So with that, talking about sustainability at MSU, what does that mean? What does that look like? It's really, again, going back to that cross-cutting, comprehensive view, and that, yes, it's absolutely about our operations here as an institution in terms of how we generate power. How do we manage our waste? Do we encourage recycling? How do we handle food waste? How do we procure items sustainably? How do we encourage sustainable transportation? But it's just equally important to think about us as an institution of higher education, and that, why are we here? We're here to teach. We're here to conduct research. We're here to conduct outreach with external communities. And so it's equally important that we think about how are we making sure that every student who graduates from MSU understands what sustainability is as a base level, and how it's going to impact their chosen career path. Because it really doesn't matter what field you go into. These global challenges, we're all facing them and will continue to face them. And equally, from a researcher standpoint, how are we incentivizing our researchers to study these problems? And maybe not just from, you know, an engineering perspective, but also bringing in the humanities, thinking about social systems and how to advance that work. How are we extending this out into the communities, helping them solve these issues? And most importantly, how do we create a culture here on campus where every Spartan realizes that they have a role to play? It is the daily simple things we do, like turning off the lights in an empty room, unplugging our electronic devices, making the decision not to consume something. So yes, recycling is important, but that's at the end stage. We need to reduce how much we consume first. So those little decisions, or how we foster an inclusive environment, how we care for other people from a well-being perspective, all of those pieces are so, so critical for us as a place to really, you know, be that sustainable institution.
Well, that's really extraordinary. And I think that, you know, oftentimes when we put the plastic milk jug in the recycling bin, you that's one step in a process, but it really is so comprehensive. And you know, a big piece of that, as you mentioned, is power and water. And so, Sherry, that takes me to ask you, could you tell us a little bit about how power works on campus? And I think that people see the power plant and assume, oh, well, the power plant gives us power. And to a degree, that's certainly accurate. But there are other sources of power beyond what's coming out of that plant. You know, we rely, I believe, still to some degree on our local utilities. We also have the relatively new solar panels over the parking lots. We've got other engines and things that we use. Walk us through how those various pieces fit together and how they create an infrastructure for making sure that when we flip that switch, the light actually turns on.
That's a very good question. We are a complex infrastructure for a complex institution. There are most of the buildings on campus are supplied electricity and heat or steam from our central power plant, but not all buildings. There are some buildings down in the farm districts and on the periphery of campus that are connected to local utilities, but most of the square footage on campus is supplied energy from us. We have a central combined heat and power plant, also known as cogeneration. Combined heat and power, that means it generates both heat, energy in the form of heat, and electricity. The heat we produce is steam. Steam's distributed across campus, and it's used for heating and cooling in the buildings. It's not, I know it's counterintuitive, but steam can be used in another process called steam absorption chillers to create chilled air in buildings, the air conditioning in the buildings. So that's the primary source. But over the decades, quite frankly, the electric consumption on campus, the pace of electric consumption on campus has outpaced the need for steam on campus. So our cogen plant, our CHP plant, four decades ago, perfectly, most efficiently supplied that energy for campus, the electricity and steam. Now, it's not the most efficient way to do it. And we've been wanting to reduce our carbon emissions. So we've made a lot of changes over the last decade. First, we transitioned from coal to natural gas. That reduced about 250,000 tons a year of carbon dioxide emissions. That's equivalent to like planting about 500,000 trees a year.
Wow.
That's a huge advancement in reducing our carbon footprint. So that was one of the first major changes. Then, about 2017, we started operation of one of the largest solar carport installations in North America. It can produce up to about 10.5 megawatts power peak. Annually, it generates between 13 and 15,000 megawatt hours per year. That's equivalent to powering somewhere between 1,500 and 1,800 average Michigan households in a year. That's on campus. We also, down in the Farms District, AgBio operates an anaerobic digester that takes organic waste from campus. Some of that's farm waste. Some of that's organic waste from the dining halls on campus, and so forth, and they digest that, creating a biogas, largely methane, and that's used in an engine to generate electricity, and that's tied into our grid too. So we're getting some electricity from productive use of that organic waste.
Which isn't to tell our students that it's okay to,
to
have that. We need to be sensitive to people only sort of pulling out what they actually think they're going to consume. But how interesting that part of our grid, if you will, is biogas created from whether it's farm waste or waste from our cafeterias. That's pretty extraordinary.
It is really awesome. We're one of the few that have such a wide variety of energy resources on our campus.
And the solar arrays are convenient for folks to keep snow off their cars in the winter and to keep their cars a little cooler in the summer months, but actually are producing a significant amount of power that goes into our system.
On an annual average basis, it produces about 5 to 6% of the electricity that's consumed on campus. On a peak day in July, like the sunniest, no cloud day in July, it can produce over a quarter of the power consumed on campus.
Wow.
At an instantaneous
That's
point.
Really amazing. Now, do we use that power immediately as it's created, or is there a storage mechanism for that power?
We do not have energy storage on campus. So all our energy resources are tied together at the central power plant, and we make daily decisions at the CHP plant what equipment we're going to operate to meet the need on campus. So we look at the weather every day, however overcast we think it's going to be, how sunny it's going to be, how much solar we think we're going to get, and we make adjustments on what equipment to turn on or what mix of equipment to operate at the CHP plant to provide the needs on campus.
Wow, that brings, I think, a layer of complexity that probably most of our listeners and certainly I would never have thought of. That's quite amazing. So when we think about sustainability, there are as that climate, both nationally and internationally, has evolved, there are metrics and tracking systems and ways that people think about how we're doing. Are we doing well? Are we not doing so well? One of our strategic planning goals was to achieve a platinum ranking in the Sustainability Tracking Assessment and Rating System, which I think people commonly refer to as STARS, by 2030. So, Laura, can you tell us what STARS is, what it means to participate in that program, and how we're doing?
Absolutely. So you've got it right on the nail on the head. Yes, we call it STARS, our beautiful STARS report. So this is a very comprehensive assessment for institutions of higher education to look at how are they doing from a sustainability standpoint. I would argue it's the most extensively vetted type of reporting framework that's out there. It's been around since 2010, and it goes through iterations every few years. They're actually just going over a new overhaul as we speak. And it's comprehensive in that, again, it's speaking to how I was describing sustainability at MSU earlier. It's not just about our operations. We also do extensive data collection around research, around curriculum, around public engagement efforts, around engagement efforts right here on campus. And then it brings in a lot of other pieces in terms of health and well-being, in terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion, coordination and planning related to sustainability. So it is really, really broad, comprehensive. And the reports are active for 3 years, in part because it truly is a massive data collection effort to put one of these together. So I'm really proud to say that we have been a gold-rated institution since 2019, and that is in and of itself a really great achievement and a testament to all of the partners across campus that do wonderful things every day to try to help keep campus green and keep moving forward. I think it is absolutely amazing that the institution has set the bar to try to reach platinum, and that if we are successful in achieving that, it would be a tremendous, tremendous achievement. There are only 14 schools right now that have this platinum rating. And part of that is because STARS is designed in such a way that to reach platinum, you really are cream of the crop. You are leading the pack. You are leading the charge in terms of what it means to be a sustainable institution. So in terms of what it's going to take to get there, it's definitely not going to be easy, in that it really is going to require investment across the entire campus, not just operations, again, academics, outreach, planning and administration, to reach that high, high bar, because they really set it very high for a reason, to distinguish those platinum rated schools. And so what we're going through right now, our next STARS report is actually due spring of 2025. So hopefully in a year, we'll be able to have some good news about continued progress. But as I mentioned, STARS goes through methodology updates, which I think is a really strong component of this reporting framework, in that when STARS was first released in 2010, what was cutting edge back then is status quo now. Sure. So we really like to see that they do go through these updates to stay relevant, stay current. And so they have just unveiled this complete new overhaul of a new version. And so we are going through a little bit of uncharted territory, in that there are significant changes in the methodology, and it's a little hard right now to fully tell how we're going to fare and what that roadmap is to reach platinum at this point. And so this is something that we're going to start actually data collection for our next STARS report this summer. And so once we get that next report submitted, that really is going to help inform how do we reach this platinum goal by 2030. But really, really exciting stuff.
Yeah, no, it sounds exciting, and how it evolves and the evolution of what we think of. You know, initially we talked a little bit about sustainability and the components of that and how they tie together is really it's fascinating to see how things have evolved. I mean, I remember as a child, you just threw everything in the trash.
Mm-hmm.
And now to think about, we have sort of a recycling bin and a trash bin, and I think culturally now you sort of feel guilty if you throw something in the trash bin as compared to figuring out how to recycle it. So that evolution, I think, says a lot about our society, and so it'll be great to to see how things come, and we'll have to get an update next year on how we're doing. So one of the components of of sustainability, of how we think about our lives on campus, is the water supply. And much like power, water has evolved over the years and continues to evolve. I think for most of our listeners, one of the most obvious signs of that evolution is the big water tower that we have on campus. And so, Sherry, could you tell us a little bit about what that does, what it means, how it makes our system and network better, why at this point in our in sort of the evolution of our campus we needed to have one of these things, and what that's about?
So we have water wells on campus, that produces the drinking water for campus. Then we treat and distribute that. We are a certified, state-certified, licensed drinking water operator, and we follow a lot of regulatory rules and reporting, testing and reporting. Our water has naturally has a lot of minerals in it, including iron. And you might recall in the past occasionally getting red water alerts. It met all federal safe drinking water standards. It was aesthetic, the red water, the iron. It's an aesthetic thing, but it doesn't look good, right? It doesn't look appetizing, and it leaves little rings in the,
yep,
you know, and in linen and so forth. So the decision was made to build a new water treatment plant on campus, and as part of that, to remove the irons and those things to make it more aesthetically pleasing, a central location for the chlorination and fluorination, those things that happen on campus for the drinking water supply. As part of that project, we decided to build a water tower, which is essentially an elevated water tank. Before that, we had an underground water tank. We called it a reservoir. It was a million-gallon tank, and we were double pumping the water. So we were pumping the water out of the wells to the reservoir, where it was treated right before it went into the reservoir, and then we were pumping it out of the reservoir and distributing it on campus. Okay. When we built the new water treatment plant, we also included the water tower, which is an elevated tank. Basically, we doubled the capacity. It's a 2 million gallon tank, so we have more capacity on campus. But now we gravity distribute that drinking water to the main campus. So we eliminated the double pumping, so we reduced our electricity consumption on top of that. So that's also good. The other thing, besides doubling the storage capacity, that also gives us, from a risk management standpoint, more water should the unthinkable happen, like a large fire on campus.
So it sounds like, although what we see visually is the tower, and that's helpful, it sounds like what really was, I don't want to say the more important part of the project, but an equally important part of the project was a treatment facility that takes that sort of rusty kind of red that you would sometimes see in our water, and helps to eliminate that.
That's right. And it's a state-of-the-art facility. It is the second in the state built with that technology, using HMO, hydrous magnesium oxide, to remove or filter out the solids, including iron. So we're very excited about it, the second in the state to have state-of-the-art technology, and the largest at this point. They're building another one that I think is going to be larger. But
as of today, we're the largest.
That's right.
Well, it's there are so many cutting-edge, groundbreaking kinds of things we do here at Michigan State that I think don't get enough attention, and that certainly falls in the list. But I think in years to come, our students and staff will take our very clean water for granted, and as probably we all do. Getting rid of that red residue, although certainly it wasn't a health issue, will be uh, will be a big step going forward and a great improvement on our campus.
It's a benefit in many ways. Besides the ways we talked about, many of the buildings on campus have water softeners as well. And so we removed that solid iron loading in the water softeners, which also improves the water softener operation too. So I could go on and on.
Well, Laura, back to you. We've talked a lot about sustainability sort of from a broad, kind of more theoretical perspective, how there are so many pieces that interrelate and link together. But to bring it sort of down to a very practical level, what are the kinds of things that our listeners on campus, or for that matter, listeners anywhere in the world, what are the kinds of things that we ought to be thinking about as we get up in the morning, as we go through our day, to be our best sustainable selves?
That is such a great question. So this is probably a great time to say that we have a sustainability pledge, that it doesn't matter whether you're here on campus or anywhere in the world, if you are an alum or just a friend of the university, anyone can take this pledge. And it actually identifies a set of actions, daily actions that we all do every day that can help you make your lives more sustainable. I think one of the most important things that I would stress at this point in time, you know, our society has changed so much just in the last decade or so. I think about online shopping, shipping, I mean, the internet, smartphones, all of these pieces of technology, and truly how our daily lives are just fundamentally different from how they were 10, 15 years ago. And so I think one thing I would really encourage listeners to do is think about their consumption habits. We buy a lot of things, we consume a lot of things. Do we really need all of these things? And part of the reason I say that is, you know, right now move out is going on around us. We've got thousands of students ushering out of campus, and we have this tremendous program called Pack Up Pitchin that's been going on for over 25 years, and we give students the opportunity to donate their gently used items rather than throw them out. Same if they happen to have extra food that they don't want to necessarily take home with them, that'll get donated to local organizations in the community. But what we see is that, you know, for students, this is how I think about it, you know, a student is coming here to live here for maybe 9 months. And for the amount of items that they purchased just for this 9 month period, living in a room that they might likely share with another person, it's a little astounding of like, okay, we might need to take a step back and again, think about our consumption habits. So that would be one thing I would really, really stress to people. Think about, do you really need that item? Do you find you have a bunch of clutter around your home and you're like, how did I get here? Trying to reduce our consumption first is most important. Yes, recycling is really important, and yes, you should do that, but reducing first is really critical. And that, again, applies to these other simple daily things. So Sherry and I like to talk about campus as if it's its own city, right? You've heard about all these utilities and things that we have, how complex it is. We have 65,000 people that make up our beautiful Spartan community. And that's a lot of people, right? And so yes, when we all make decisions to turn off the lights or unplug a computer, you know, that's going to be drawing electricity over the weekend, things like that, it truly does add up because we are so large. And one thing I really want to point out that Sherry mentioned earlier, Sherry, you were talking about how the power plant is, you're looking at what are the power demand needs for campus. The power plant only produces the power that campus needs. So it's such a critical concept to understand. And this is true of, you know, whether you're here on campus or you're getting, you know, at your home, wherever your local utility is, your power plant is only producing the power that you need. So if you conserve energy, then in theory, that's less energy that the power plant has to produce. So those little things, making the decision of maybe walking somewhere, you know, if it's 10 minutes away rather than driving, all of those little pieces truly do add up for sure. And it might seem small some days. I know there are certain things that I think we're just getting a little too comfortable with convenience nowadays. Mm-hmm. And thinking again, how can I reduce my impact? And ultimately, we are an institution made up of people. And so how we all behave really does make a difference.
No, Laura, very timely. Last night, I moved my freshman back home. And My wife and I, as we were getting ready to drive over to campus, were thinking to ourselves, do we need to just take one car, or do we need to take both cars? And she has a minivan, and I have an SUV, and probably not the most sustainable vehicles, but we decided on both. And when we picked up our student who's finishing his freshman year, we discovered that we needed both, and he had a lot of stuff. But it was also really gratifying to walk through, in our case, Holden Hall, and see the places where people could donate things, mm-hmm. and our son had shared with us that, yeah, those were regularly filled and regularly emptied. That just because it was half full, yesterday it was full, and so it's gratifying to see our students, although probably we could all use a little less stuff, thinking about how they what they do with their stuff and how it can go to good use in the community and otherwise. So
absolutely, and it really, you know, a shout out to Surplus Store and Recycling Center, to Student Life and Engagement. Those folks and facilities are working round the clock to help keep move out going. The same thing happens during move in, you've kind of alluded to this, Bill. So all those materials that we do collect from home goods are sent to the Surplus Store, where then the community can purchase them. You if you have an incoming student, you could outfit your entire dorm room by just shopping Surplus come the fall. And as a fun fact, so obviously move out is still going on, so we don't have data yet for this year. But last year, Surplus Store and Recycling Center, they had over 70 box truck loads of items.
Wow.
Collected from students, which is a tremendous amount. And then in terms of food donations that we got from students, it was just around 12,000 pounds of food collected from students living in the halls.
That's extraordinary.
So again, think of MSU, big city, big numbers,
yes.
Big impact.
Yes. That is really, really amazing. So I always like to sort of wrap up these conversations with some more fun questions. So Sherry, when we think about power, what are the days of the year where your facilities, your plant is working at its sort of more peak capacity? What are our most power intensive days of the year, and are there days of the year or times, seasons that we really have significant dips, or is it just really pretty consistent every day? I mean, you think in the summer, for example, we have air conditioning that takes a lot of power, but we also don't have students on campus, and the residence halls aren't air conditioned anyway. What are the kinds of things are there days or weeks or months where you worry, boy, we've really got to be at full capacity, and other times where the load is significantly lighter?
It is. There's daily cycles, and there are seasonal cycles. On the energy side, the thermal energy side, because most space conditioning on campus is achieved using steam, heating for heating and cooling. So our largest thermal cycle seasons are winter and summer. Winter for heating, summer for cooling. Now, most of the students may not be on campus, but there's still research and operations going on. If there's even one person in a building, that building needs to be space conditioned. Now, we've gotten better over the years of with new building designs of targeted space conditioning. The older buildings, not so much. There's not a lot of control over, mm-hmm. you know, being able to change conditions in different areas of the buildings. But we don't see a whole lot of difference from a thermal side, whether the students are on campus or not.
Okay.
On the electric side, you see more of an impact because the plug demand, right? All the devices and things going mm-hmm. on. And so we see more of a change seasonally with the electric demand related to whether the students can hear or not. Now, there is a daily variation. I will say electric demand never goes to zero. It just doesn't.
Yep.
There's always a minimum demand on campus. And it happens in the evenings when most people are asleep and when space conditioning is, you know, adjusted to minimum. And So we turn down the power plant at night, and we purchase more power. I should first talk about peak and on-peak power and off-peak power. Have you heard of that concept?
Yeah, but please share it.
So this is common across the country. There's more electricity consumed during certain hours of the day, less at night, more during weekdays, less on weekends. It cycles up and down. That peak power demand from a utility standpoint and from a public service commission standpoint, you need to understand your peak demands so you can build out your infrastructure to support that peak need, right? And you need to have the infrastructure available, and it has to be operated and maintained to meet that peak need. Well, if you can minimize that peak, that means less infrastructure, right? Less infrastructure build out, less operation and maintenance of that infrastructure. So in Michigan, the Public Service Commission sets peak and allows peak and on-peak, off-peak hours. So for Consumers Energy, for example, which is one of the utilities in this region, their on-peak hours are 11 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Okay.
Off-peak hours are Monday through Friday, and then off-peak hours are the opposite. Weekends are off-peak. On-peak hours, depending on what rate plan you're on, on-peak hours can cost a little more than off-peak hours. And the Service Commission, Public Service Commission, and the utilities do that not because they're trying to make more money. It's because they're trying to incentivize the consumers to change our behaviors.
So you hear people talk about things like not running your dishwasher during the day. You know, run it maybe after you have dinner after 7 o'clock
after
or something
7 p.m.
like that.
That's exactly right. Same with doing your laundry. That discretionary power use, if you can choose to do it in off-peak hours, not only will it potentially save you money if you're on a off-peak rate with your utility, but then it means we're managing that growing energy consumption and managing our need to build, operate, maintain even more infrastructure.
Well, and I recall when the solar grids were put in place, we talked about the concept of peak shaving, meaning that the hours when the sun was most likely to be out and bright and shining were also those times when during the peak hours of power. And so if we could sort of use that solar grid to essentially cut the top off of that peak and reduce our energy requirements, it sort of naturally fit together in our energy package, that the solar could help us when essentially you most need the help.
That's true. So we see the same thing on campus. Monday through Friday, the energy demand goes up, and then it comes down and goes up. The highest day of the week is Wednesday.
Huh, that's interesting.
The lowest days of the week are Mondays and Fridays of energy demand on campus. We joke, we can tell when everybody's leaving campus on a Friday.
you know first because the little meter in the power plant starts to go down.
That's right. And then there's generally less electric consumption on campus on the weekends. But we make operating decisions at the central power plant because we want to operate as efficiently as we can, not only from a cost standpoint, but the more efficient we can be, the less fuel we consume, the less carbon footprint we have. So we do things like we ramp the power plant down at night and we purchase more off-peak power.
So there are
times because that's more cost effective for us because off-peak power is a little less expensive than our cost to self-generate.
So there are times when it's actually cheaper to buy it from our local utility than to make it ourselves. And so you make those decisions based on our power load and really the time of day.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So, Laura, back to you with at least what struck me as kind of a fun and interesting question. I noticed when getting ready to talk with you this morning, looking at the website, that we had a really interesting designation that I was unfamiliar with. Now, I knew that we were a bicycle-friendly campus, and that designation we've had for a number of years. And Tim Potter and the team over at the Bike Shop are just extraordinary. Tim and I worked together several decades ago in the Alumni Association, and he's done that work in the Bike Shop for many years now. But I also noticed we had a designation as a B campus, and I thought that was really cool. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. So this is a relatively new designation that we have, and we actually just submitted our first renewal for this designation earlier this year. So in terms of what is B Campus USA, this is a program run by the Xerxes Society, and it's really looking at ways that as an institution of higher education, we can support pollinators. So while bees are in the name, it's not just about bees, it's about all forms of pollinators, how we can support their habitat, ensure that they are still on planet Earth. I can't emphasize enough to listeners, pollinators truly do pollinate many of the food-producing crops that we have on planet Earth. They are absolutely essential to our food supply, let alone being just, you know, butterflies and beautiful things that we can all enjoy. And so in terms of the designation, part of it is, you know, what are we doing operationally to protect pollinators? So we've planted pollinator gardens across campus. How do we ensure that we're using chemicals that maybe are less harmful to pollinator species? I do want to give a shout out. We have a club called Environmental Studies and Students United, and they are working with a few different campus partners to actually plant a new pollinator garden right out front of the Natural Resources Building. So that should be going in this fall. So for those coming back for football season, you know, stop by, check it out. We also look at how are we educating the public around how to protect pollinators themselves. And so we have a really great program. It's called the Pollinator Champions Course. This is a free, self-paced online course. Anyone can sign up for it. And it'll walk you through, you know, what are pollinators? What is pollination? What role do they play in our ecosystems? And how can you best protect pollinators at your home or within your local community? So if you're really passionate about this, or maybe you have a passion for gardening but don't know much about this, I really encourage you to check that out. Just Google MSU Pollinator Champions and you'll find it. And that's through the Michigan Pollinator Initiative that we have here at MSU. And then thirdly, again, speaking to us as a higher ed institution, we've always got to have that research component, the education component. So part of what it means to be a B Campus USA is that we are embedding this information within our curriculum and that we have researchers and whatnot that are studying these issues. And we have tremendous folks here at MSU doing this work. So we're really excited. There's a whole B Campus USA committee. They're getting underway to think about, okay, we've kind of got our baseline now of this nice foundation that we have. We've got the Pollinator Performance Center that's really expanding our research outreach capacity here at the university. So what's next? How can we keep moving that needle? So that's what B Campus USA is all about.
Very, very cool. It's so neat that we're engaged in this kind of work. And as I said earlier, there are so many sort of best-kept secrets at Michigan State that hopefully this forum, podcasts like this, can help get out a little bit. Well, I think that I want to thank both of you for being with us today. The stewardship and sustainability theme is in very good hands, and the work that you're doing on a daily basis to make our campus the extraordinary place that it is certainly appreciated by me, and I'm sure, although they don't know exactly who you are, many tens of thousands of students, as well as our faculty and staff. The next time that I flip my lights on, Sherry, I'll think of the behind-the-scenes team that made that happen, and it's just it's so refreshing to know that that we've got such a solid, energetic, excited a set of teams that really drive our campus so that the extraordinary research can take place, students can learn and go out. And as I tell them, my definition of a Spartan is a person who makes his or her corner of the world a better place, and you allow that to happen every day. So thank you very much. Russ, back to you.
All right. Well, that was Bill Beekman. He's our Vice President for Strategic Initiatives. We've been discussing progress on the implementation of a key theme of MSU 2030 Strategic Plan, the Stewardship and Sustainability Plan. We did that with Laura Young from the Office of Sustainability and Sherry Jett from Infrastructure Planning and Facilities. Much more online at strategicplan.msu.edu. And I'm Russ White. This is MSU Today.